Support for WMNF comes from our members and the Stras Center, presenting the National Geographic Live Multimedia Speaker Series. The next installment is Life, the Unfolding Story with Franz Lanting, wildlife photographer, Tuesday, February 21st at 7 p.m. More at strascenter.org or 813-229-STAR. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with Karen Atwood of Florida Parrot Rescue about various aspects of rescuing, adopting, and living with companion parrots. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Sharon Van Etten, new music from her with Serpents here on Talking Animals. Music, new music, in fact, from Sharon Van Etten with Serpents, an animal song of sorts to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Karen Atwood of Florida Parrot Rescue, and she's here to discuss the various rewards and challenges at times, I guess, of living with birds, what's involved with rescuing, fostering, or adopting birds, and the ways Florida Parrot Rescue can help with all those things and more. Plus, Karen brought a bird. Stevie's here in studio with us, as is Karen. All very exciting. So we'll find out more about all those things and meet Stevie officially in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Not that we won't hear from him in the meantime. But anyway, as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Robert Cray at Janice Live on February 16th. And we'll hear more animal songs, including one from Mike Doty, who will be stepping into the WMNF studios today, joining Scott Elliott for a session slated to happen about 2 p.m., I believe. Right now, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item, again, suggest that you mark your calendars for the Talking Animals Music Night. It's going to feature upwards of 10 great bands from the greater Tampa Bay area performing animal songs. It's going to be held March 31st at New World Brewery, featuring a musically diverse slate of bands, including Sons of Hippies, Johnny Cakes and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypso, Rebecca Pulley, Ricky Wilcox and the Moonsnakes, Sunset Bridge, Talk to Mark featuring Scott Elliott. That's right, WNF's own Scott Elliott, the host of the All Souls edition of It's the Music, aforementioned. Comes up right after this show. Anyways, more bands will be announced in the coming days as they are confirmed tickets. And this benefit for WNF will be a modest $8 in advance, $10 at the door. WMNF.org for more information about that one. And breaking news, hot off the presses, courtesy passed along to me by Sean Canan, WMNF's Assistant Public Affairs and News Director. Hillsborough County's Sheriff's Office, Animal Services, and Code Enforcement are on the scene, this is as of about an hour ago, at a residence located at 8023 South Meadowview Circle in Tampa. A search warrant is being served at the residence in reference to an illegal game fighting operation. And as a follow-up to our conversation last week with Jamie Bueller about the ordinance in Miami-Dade County preventing pit bulls and therefore preventing people like them and others from moving there, they have a pit bull. Little blurb here says, Miami-Dade County's dangerous dog ordinance, which specifically bans pit bulls, would be abolished by a bill, HB 997, scheduled for a hearing in the House Community and Military Affairs Subcommittee. The state created a dog law several years ago that preempted local laws, but Miami-Dade's pit bull ban was allowed to stand. The proposed bill would eliminate that exception. Exactly what Jamie was and I were talking about last week, so let's hope that moves through the House. From the Los Angeles Times LA Now blog, a federal judge appeared dubious Monday about a lawsuit filed by the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals that seeks the release of orcas from SeaWorld on anti-slavery grounds. PETA attorney Jeffrey Kerr told U.S. District Court Judge Jeffrey Miller that invoking the anti-slavery 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution in hopes of freeing the orcas, quote, is the next frontier of civil rights. But Miller told Kerr that he cannot find a legal precedent for allowing a lawsuit to be filed on behalf of the orcas under the 13th Amendment. The orcas, he noted, are animals, not people. The judge also seemed to reject PETA's argument that SeaWorld is being hysterical, quote-unquote, in suggesting that allowing PETA's lawsuit to continue will lead to more lawsuits on behalf of other animals, including dogs used by the military and police departments. Quote, call me hysterical, but that's one of the first places I went in my thinking about this case, Miller said. After the hour-long hearing, Miller said he will study SeaWorld's request to have the PETA lawsuit dismissed. He said he will issue his ruling soon, but did not give a deadline. Follow that one closely, obviously. Back closer to home, animal-based charities. It's one of those that has a Valentine's Day-related event coming up this weekend. This one is this Saturday, February 11th, My Furry Valentine at the Shops at Wiregrass. And it's a huge pet adoption event. They're expecting 60-plus local rescue groups, vendors, hundreds of adoptable animals, and more. So there'll be all kinds of things to do, photo contests, bounce house, face painting, raffles, silent auction, etc. So that is this Saturday, February 11th, again, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Shops at Wiregrass Mall, 28211 Paseo Drive, Wesley Chapel. You can find out more at animal-based charities.org. And for those interested in learning to identify and photograph birds, different kinds of birds, seabirds, There is a class starting February 18th called Shore Seabird Identification Classes. Each class starts on Dunedin Causeway to study shore seabirds through binoculars and spotting scopes. We'll have a classroom session begin at 9 a.m. and features a different suite of shorebirds and seabirds. And you can find out more at clearwateraudubon.com. The class runs from February 18th through March 3rd, 7:30 a.m. to 12 noon each of those days. Another Valentine's Day related event on Sunday the 12th, Camp Bow Wow Tampa Airport is hosting the annual Cupids and Canines Celebration from noon to 3 p.m. Sunday, February 12th at 4624 North Grady Avenue in Tampa. The event aims to raise awareness and funds for a pack of worthy canine causes, including the Florida Pug Rescue, Florida Big Dog Rescue, Miracle of Strangers, and the Bow Wow Buddies Foundation. Additional adoption and rescue groups are expected to also participate. Dog Training Club of Tampa will also be joining to show agility and obedience. And tracking the ongoing story from the whole Cleveland debacle, an Ohio lawmaker on Tuesday will propose restrictions on exotic animal ownership 4 months after the release of dozens of dangerous beasts, including tigers and grizzly bears, set off a brief panic in rural Ohio. But animal rights activists said the proposed limits on ownership were too little, too late. On October 18th, a man caused a panic by releasing 56 exotic animals, including predators such as lions, tigers, grizzly bears, and wolves, and then shot himself. Police hunted down and killed 49 of the animals. Six were recovered and sent to the Columbus Zoo, and one was apparently eaten by the other animals. One of those sent to the zoo died last week. Ohio is one of seven U.S. states that lacks restrictions on exotic animal ownership. The proposal would eventually ban the private sale and purchase of specific animals considered potentially dangerous. And the nominations for the annual Genesis Awards were announced yesterday. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Warhorse, and the documentary Buck were among the films nominated for the 26th Genesis Awards by the Humane Society of the United States. The HSUS announced yesterday the Genesis Awards honors films with animal-friendly themes and creative portrayals of animal protection. In the case of Planet of the Apes, that means a film in which apes engage in a violent revolt against mistreatment. In the feature film category, Apes and Warhorse were nominated alongside Dolphin Tale and the animated film Rio. Buck will compete in the feature documentary category against One Lucky Elephant and the IMAX 3D doc Born to be Wild. And we might come back to some other things in a bit, but we have Karen here, we have Stevie here, so geez, we should probably get to it. So let's step in now to the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. We always keep them brief when the guest is in studio with us, as Karen and Stevie are today. So this is Dave Attell with a highly relevant, if irreverent, piece called Parrot on today's Comedy Corner. I'm talking animals.
Oh my God, I'm sorry, I thought I had a parrot on my shoulder. You ever get that? Nothing. Nothing. I wish I had a parrot. I really do. And I wouldn't teach them dirty words or songs, no. I would teach them phone numbers and addresses and recipes. I'd use them more like a Palm Pilot, you know? Or I teach them things that might save my life, you know, like information, like, in case of an earthquake, get in the doorway, bam! No one has freckles on their ass. Use a condom. Bam! Thank you, Parrot. Here's a grape.
All right. Here's a grape indeed. That was Dave Attell with a piece called Parrot, taken from his album Skanks for the Memories. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time now to meet officially today's guest, Karen Atwood. As I noticed earlier, Karen is with Florida Parrot Rescue. Her title is the novella-length Senior West Coast Vice President and Southwest Coast Foster Coordinator. We'll be discussing avian rescue, rehabilitation, fostering adoption, and how Florida Parrot Rescue can help with each of those things. Plus, again, she brought a bird into the studio. Stevie's here. Very cool. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Karen Atwood and Stevie to Talking Animals. Good morning, Karen.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Hi, Stevie. So he's not as vocal now, I guess, right? Because he's kind of relaxed?
He's getting more comfortable, yeah. So he's not as vocal as he was before. Now he's eating, too. So.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll come back to him. He can chime in at any point that he likes, especially on a show called Talking Animals. I can't imagine what could be more fitting. So anyway, let's start at the beginning. Just tell us maybe a little bit of Florida Parrot Rescue's history, how it began and when and under what circumstances.
Well, about 6 years ago, the current director, Jennifer Underwood James, and one of her friends, Chris, felt that there was a need for a parrot rescue. They were working in a vet clinic, and they saw a lot of people that were coming in and trying to relinquish birds or trying to find homes for them. And so they felt that a rescue was needed. And so they started what was then called Tampa Bay Parrot Rescue. And Tampa Bay Parrot Rescue has always been working out of foster homes. So we don't have a shelter or an actual location, but we have fosters and volunteers spread all over. And because it originally began in Tampa, a lot of them are here. Mm-hmm. But over time, it began to focus on parrots only. At one time, it was dogs and cats and other exotics. But we felt that there was already plenty of rescues for dogs and cats. They just needed community support. What there was not was a rescue that focused mainly on parrots. So at that time, we applied for and became a 501c3 through the IRS and a nonprofit through the state of Florida. And the name was changed to Florida Parrot Rescue because we started having foster homes all over the state. So we currently have over 90 foster homes and volunteers spread from Miami to Pensacola. And we currently have about 145 birds in rescue. We are all volunteer run, so we don't have any paid employees.
And that kind of reminds me of a question I had too, it sounds like it has evolved in interesting different ways over those 6+ years. But was there ever a point when anyone imagined that there might be, say, a paid director or some, you know, paid position of leadership or otherwise, or was it clearly kind of always going to be volunteer run and will likely remain that way?
It will likely remain that way unless we were to add a sanctuary portion to the rescue, which we have talked about and we have looked into doing. That's not possible right now due to limited funding. Mm-hmm. For example, last year for 2011, we had over 220 intakes of birds. We had 170 adoptions, but we spent $29,000 on vet bills.
Wow.
So our current largest expenditure is vet bills, and it probably will always remain that. I can't see it ever moving away from that.
Yeah. So the name of the organization, although it's broadened out from Tampa Bay Parrot Rescue to Florida Parrot Rescue, so it certainly suggests, you know, obviously on the widening on the one hand, but still kind of a Florida focus on the other. To what extent does it function or provide services outside the state despite the Florida name?
We have occasionally had people get in touch with us that would like to have birds either shipped down here or brought down here for relinquishment. Also, our educational aspect does extend outside of Florida as well. We have Florida Parrot Rescue Facebook page, mm-hmm. Where we have a lot of people that have liked us that are not located just in Florida. So we do get a lot of support outside of that as well. We do occasionally offer out-of-state adoptions under certain circumstances, and those requirements are listed on our website.
Okay, cool. So as you kind of alluded to, Karen, education is in various ways, I guess, is kind of a pretty crucial component of what Florida Parrot Rescue does. I mean, animal events, festivals, the Facebook page you mentioned, your website, which is great and really kind of extensive, radio shows, et cetera. So what in those different kind of forms and mediums, what would you say are the most important messages that the organization communicates or seeks to communicate?
The most important message certainly is education and that there are pros and cons to owning parrots just like any other animal. Some of the pros being that they are affectionate, they are long-term animals, but that can also be a con, being that they're a long-term animal, because these birds can live anywhere from 20 to 80 years, depending on the species.
And So that's one thing that I think some people know. Some people, I think, are surprised, especially when you get up to the 80-year range. I mean, you know, Most of us hope that we live to 80 years, but some of us do or don't, and some of us don't adopt when we're infants. So 80-year span of a bird does present some specific kinds of needs and thinking and planning, I would guess, for those who are saying, oh, you know what, look, we've always wanted a bird in our family, let's adopt. What else? We're going to come back to that in a second, I guess, in terms of just some of the adoption criteria, but what else, because I think you said that, you know, they're affectionate, which can cut both ways, but also I think a lot of people think that know a little bit about birds, these kind of birds, that they can be at least really sort of noisy, and there's that whole element, which I think for some people has, who didn't maybe do as much research or get as much educational impact from an organization like yours, shock people, and then they say, oh my God, I can't take this. I can't live with this bird if this is how it's going to be. So what does that mean? I mean, what is the sounds that they make, and what kind of issues have those become for people looking to adopt?
Well, living with parrots certainly can be very messy and very loud, depending on the species. Again, every species is different. But what I've always said is that a quiet bird is not a well bird. So if you're going to have a parrot, expect there to be some level of noise, some quieter than others. The largest birds, such as umbrella cockatoos, Moluccan cockatoos, and large blue and golds, are designed in the wild to be heard up to 2 miles away. So that can sometimes pose a problem when you're trying to have that type of bird in a companion home. It is normal for them to vocalize once or twice a day, usually in the morning or in the evening. They're waking everyone up in their flock. They're putting everyone to bed in their flock, and then vocalizing in between as well, which, of course, can cause problems not only in the household but in neighboring homes. For example, I live in a home in a neighborhood where they're only about 15 or 20 feet apart, so I'm careful about the birds that I foster, and I stick with the small and medium birds. Other people that live in more rural areas or on farms can have these larger birds. But that is one of the reasons that we get a lot of birds relinquished to the rescue, is because of the noise factor. They will purchase baby birds that are not very noisy at first, that over the course of several years will become noisier and noisier, and they sort of sometimes can play into the situation where they're actually teaching the bird to become louder because of certain reactions that they'll have to those noises.
Like, hey, will you quiet down, and or worse?
Well, any kind of reaction to a bird is viewed to them as a positive reaction or
sure.
an encouragement,
yeah.
whether you think it's negative or you think
right.
it's positive. For example, Stevie came in a very, very vocal bird, screaming a lot and almost all day. And over time, we have gotten him to quiet down and vocalize a lot less. And there are certain types of training that you can do to implement it. It's a little complicated to go into here.
Sure.
But basically, a lot of it is really not reacting. So when he does decide to scream, my family and I know, we ignore that. Unless it's a scream because, you know, obviously it's going to be a little different if someone is injured or in trouble.
Sure.
But most screams we will ignore, and we don't give attention to the birds until they are quiet or they're using their talking voice, which of course is acceptable. And a lot of these vocalizations that some people feel are excessive aren't necessarily excessive. They're normal for them and really not to be discouraged. So you do have to understand that you have to live with a certain amount of noise and mess too.
So let's just hang with Stevie for a sec, just because he happens to be here, and I've already become quite fond of him. But so when he first came, I guess, so you're fostering Stevie, or is he now part of your family officially?
I'm fostering Stevie.
Okay.
I have three foster birds. One is Kismet, a Hans Macaw. I have a parrotlet named Jocko, and then I have Stevie. Stevie is a Red Lord Amazon. He's guessed to be about 10 years old. We don't know his exact age. He came out of a hoarding situation in Orlando back in August, where 35 birds were taken by Florida Parrot Rescue out of one home. They ranged everywhere from lovebirds to green-winged macaws. And he had not been out of his cage in a very long time. He had only one perch. He was on a very poor diet, no toys. And when I first got Stevie, I actually thought he was aggressive. I couldn't have been further from the truth. After a few days of us getting used to each other and my being able to handle him, I actually found that he does have a little bit of a physical disability that doesn't allow him to step up. So when I take him out of the cage, I do have to sort of scoop him up and take him out of the cage. And at first, when he wouldn't step up for me, I thought, like I said, it was because of aggression, because he would also threaten to bite me, but he would never actually bite me. He still does that to a certain extent. He never actually bites, but he's actually a very, very affectionate bird. He's almost like a house cat. He'll be happy sitting in your lap all day and just letting you pet him and talk to him.
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, before we went on the air here, we were all kind of hanging out, and yeah, Stevie couldn't have been. You guys were just chatting away and hanging out and kind of petting him, and I was talking to him, and he seemed like he couldn't have been happier. But I guess, you know, in fact, I remember now, I think we reported on that hoarding situation. But a few moments ago, you said when he first came to you, very, very noisy. Now, was that the product of coming out of the hoarding situation specifically, or just generally not being cared for, obviously in a very careful way, in a good way? And so does that, was he traumatized to a certain extent, or was that what kind of led to you know, being as noisy as you described he was initially, or?
Well, there could be lots of different reasons for excessive screaming in parrots. Sometimes it can be for attention. It can be because they're scared. It can be because they're uncomfortable, because they're looking for their person. They can't see you and they want to know where you are. In his case, I feel it's some type of separation anxiety. Combined with him just not getting enough attention. He's in a home now where he gets a lot of one-on-one attention, and that has really lessened that. He's also not in a room with 34 other birds where he has to be heard above everyone else. Most of my other birds are fairly quiet. Some of them came in as screamers and have learned not to be that vocal over time. And like I said, he's still learning, but he is becoming more and more comfortable in our home and with everyone in it. And he actually likes everybody in the house. He's not one of those birds that picks one specific person. He's affectionate with everyone.
Well, that sounds like that might be pivotal, because if you've, sound like you've kind of identified that one of the sort of elements of his story or his, you know, kind of day to day, feelings about things is a particular concern about separation anxiety. One of the things I was thinking as you were describing that was, like, again, just watching you guys together a few minutes ago, was if you're fostering, and therefore obviously I guess the idea, of course, is that, you know, Steve will be placed in a forever home at some point, how will that affect him if he's got those kind of separation anxiety issues to then be removed from you and the rest of your family?
Well, one of the things that we do as part of our adoption requirement, the last thing, in fact, and like you said, we'll get into those requirements in just a minute, but the last thing is that people do have to come and meet the birds that they are interested in adopting in the home that they are being fostered in. We do that because the birds are comfortable in the home and they can see what the bird is really like. So, for example, I had a family that came and visited Stevie a few weeks ago that stayed for 2 hours, and he became quite comfortable with them. But what we're looking for when we do that is that A, they can handle the bird. B, we go a little bit more extensive outside of the home interview to discuss that bird's specific needs. And C, that there is some type of connection. And in Stevie's case, and we'll do this on a case-by-case basis, but in Stevie's case, when he does get adopted out, we're going to require that he's visited several times by the people that want to adopt them, so that when he does leave, he knows them very well and he's comfortable with them.
So that transition is as smooth as it can be. And again, I'm sure some birds are more or less prone to the separation anxiety that you describe, but sounds like the process regardless is pretty standard, so that whether they don't have it maybe as pronounced a fashion as Stevie, that's still going to go pretty well into the new home.
Yeah, more birds are going to be comfortable going into another home right away where they only have one or two visits. Like I said, with him, we're going to require a few more just because we want to make sure that he's comfortable in any situation he goes into. We don't want him to turn into a screaming bird again.
Right.
Because that could result in him being returned to us. And, and these birds are very smart animals. They can have the mentality of human children ages 2 to 4. And so juggling them around just like a child can be detrimental to their mental health. So we certainly don't want that to happen.
Right, right. Okay, let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tune in, we're speaking with Karen Atwood, Senior West Coast Vice President and Southwest Coast Foster Coordinator for Florida Parrot Rescue. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Karen a question about parrots, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. Well, actually, let's, we got one, we did have a caller I was gonna just include, but then maybe they'll call back. It sounds like you guys are obviously very, very careful, and there's a real process in place that, again, is slightly customized, or not slightly, more than slightly customized for the bird in case. But, you know, still, what are the things that can still go wrong, just because it's probably hard to anticipate everything as careful as you guys are and as experienced as you got, or what might lead to people calling up and saying X amount of days or weeks later, Stevie or whoever it might be, you know, it's just not going to work. And what are those reasons when you do get those calls?
Well, in fact, Stevie had actually been adopted out before. Oh, he was returned to me 2 weeks later because the new owner had developed an allergy to him that she had not been aware of before, despite her visits to come and visit him, and the fact that I had other birds in the home. It took prolonged exposure to him for that allergy to come to the forefront. So he was returned because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And she had not previously known that she was allergic to birds. And it was unfortunate because her and Stevie did get along very well, and she cared about him very much.
Yeah.
But also good that he was able to come back to me where he knew me. But other issues could be, as we discussed before, we do try to educate people about screaming birds, how to avoid it, positive reinforcement training. Sometimes, on occasion, it doesn't happen very often. The people won't exactly do what we have suggested that they do to try to avoid that type of thing. But mostly, if we've seen returns before, which have been very few and far between with birds coming back into rescue, it's because something has happened in that person's life that is, they necessarily cannot do anything about. For example, a job loss or home loss or being transferred and not being able to take the animal with them. For example, there are certain states that Quaker parrots are not allowed. We're allowed to have Quaker parrots here. So we had a case one time where a Quaker parrot was relinquished to us because the person's job was transferring them to a state where they were illegal to have.
Well, okay, and I want to get some callers involved, but I'm just very interested just because I don't know as much as I should about this area. So what is a Quaker parrot, and why would there be a, like what sounds like almost a kind of a equivalent of a breed discrimination law against having them in certain states?
Quaker parrots are a small to medium-sized parrot that actually can live about 25 to 30 years, and you actually probably have seen flocks of wild Quaker parrots in Florida. They happen to be a very robust species that will eat just about anything, and they do very well in the temperatures that we have in Florida. And because of that, people, just like with snakes down in the Everglades, people have released Quaker parrots into the environment here, and they do. There are breeding stocks of Quaker parrots in this area. So that's one reason that some states have banned them, because they can outcompete native species.
Wow. And what are the states, just out of curiosity, that have imposed that?
I don't know the list off the top of my head. I do have a list at home for that reason for when we do out of states, but California is one.
Okay, I was wondering.
And, that's because they have very temperatures there,
climate,
so it'd be very easy for Quakers to live there in the wild.
Right.
That's not true for most exotic, birds. Most parrots cannot handle living in the wild in Florida or anywhere else.
Yeah.
But you will occasionally see them, and in fact, it is actually illegal to release them in Florida.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, let's take a call and get involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Karen Atwood.
Hello. Am I the person to whom you're addressing?
You are indeed. It is your turn, sir.
How are you doing? Thanks very much for taking the call.
Sure.
My name is Lloyd, and I'm calling from Lakeland. There's nothing I love better than to have a parrot, but I've got too many cats. A question came to my mind, though. What would someone have to do, or what do you recommend that people do to educate themselves if they wanted to adopt one of these parrots? And do you have an adoption fee? I know that people go to vets the animal stores, and they pay incredible sums of money to buy these, exotic birds, and they do live a long time. People, I don't think, realize that. Is there an adoption fee that's a standard that keeps you guys in business, or how does that work in this adoption thing? I think it would be interesting for people that would like to adopt one of your parrots know that.
Well, thanks for your call, and I'm going to have Karen address that in 1 second. I just want to say that on WMNF, as a nonprofit, non-commercial station, we're not really allowed to communicate the costs of things. But I will say that, as I mentioned before, and more specifically, I want to say now, they have a great Florida Parrot Rescue. Has a great, great, thorough website, floridaparrotrescue.com, and all the fees are presented there. And they're also, as we also touched on earlier, on Facebook, and it's facebook.com/FLParrotRescue. But you can just search for it, and they have a great Facebook page there. But, I mean, you could certainly just generally address the costs and how, you know, I mean, you just mentioned the staggering vet bills, so I assume that the adoption fees are really designed to kind of help mitigate those and other costs of the operation as a nonprofit.
Yes, and as you mentioned, all of those adoption fees are listed next to each bird, which is their bios and pictures are listed on the website, www.floridaparrotrescue.com, and those fees associated with each bird depend on species, and it depends on the average vet care and care cost for while that bird is in rescue.
Cool. Cool, cool. So how did you specifically, Karen, get interested in birds and you know, when did you sort of first bring a bird into the home?
Well, I actually have only been with Florida Parrot Rescue for about 3 years. My undergraduate degree is in zoology, and my master's is in marine science. And so I work in the field of marine science for the state of Florida currently. And I've always done volunteer work since I was young, starting in college. And I volunteered for Save Our Seabirds, which is currently located out of Sarasota. And so when I went to graduate school, I focused on, because I study red tide, I focused on red tide in seabirds. And so that was where I first started with birds. But I've also always fostered dogs and cats. In fact, I used to bottle feed abandoned kittens. And then when I had my third child, my youngest, we found out she was allergic to cats. So obviously we had to move away from that. So I thought, well, what else can I do in my home to help other animals? You know, I already have dogs. I already have cats.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try parrots. So I contacted Jennifer James with, at that time, was Tampa Bay Parrot Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And she suggested, why not I try fostering? Which actually is something that we will suggest to people when they're not sure whether or not a bird will fit into their lifestyle, mm-hmm. and they're not sure what type of bird would fit into their lifestyle. We suggest fostering because then they only have to keep the bird for as long as it takes to get adopted. We take care of the vet bills, of course, which come from those adoption fees,
sure.
and other donations. But they can also learn a lot doing that as well. So my first foster bird was a Quaker. His name was Apollo, and he loved me. He actually, from where I picked him up from his home, because the fosters do pick up the birds from the owners and bring them home and then get them to our vet,
mm-hmm.
Where I picked him up from, he had not been let out of his cage in a very long time. He was not used to being handled. And so my kids and I got him used to being handled. And when he met my father, it was love at first sight, and my father actually ended up adopting my first foster bird.
Oh, wow. Nice way to keep it all in the family. Yeah.
And they're great. Inseparable. He goes, he will not go anywhere if the bird cannot go with him.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And fostering, like you say, sounds like in this case, in some ways, slightly different than the way fostering might work in the cat and dog world. Really a great way to kind of get people a direct sense of like, hey, could I be a bird person? Could I have a bird living in? So how many people that foster through Florida Parrot Rescue then become, you know, adopters of either those birds they're fostering or the next bird that maybe enters the picture?
Well, probably like every other rescue, including mm-hmm. dog and cat rescues, it's a large majority, probably around 85% or 90%.
Sure. Yeah.
It just depends on how soon. I didn't adopt my first bird for a year and a half, and I've adopted two birds. I have a Goffin cockatoo named Coco that I adopted about a year ago, and then we have a love bird named Cujo that we adopted about 6 months ago. And that's enough for us.
Yeah.
Outside of that, we're fine fostering and just with those two because my Goffin cockatoo will live to be about 50. Fortunately, she loves everyone in the house, so I'm fortunate that one of my children will be able to take her should I no longer be able to care for her.
And so you guys obviously had that kind of conversation before you adopted or as part of the adoption process because, again, as we touched on a couple times and the caller alluded to it, many of these birds live so long that seems like that would have to be kind of part of a plan to adopt.
Yes, and in fact, the last part of the process after they meet the bird and it's decided that there's some type of connection and the bird is going to be adopted by this potential adopter, then we do have them sign an adoption contract which states many things, one of which is that if the bird has the possibility of outliving them, they do need to account for that bird in their will. And the other being that if for any reason they can no longer care for the bird, whatever reason that may be, they cannot sell it, they cannot give it away, they do have to return it back to the rescue as a relinquishment, unless there is an immediate family member that is familiar with the bird that the bird likes that can then continue to care for the bird.
Wow. So it's pretty carefully covered, or to the extent it can be, just really, again, minimizing that even years down the road, there'll be that kind of relinquishment just because people haven't thought it through or made a provision for it.
Correct.
Yeah. And one thing, too, that you made a reference to when you're sort of describing the history, and again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Stress. My guest is Karen Atwood of Florida Parent Rescue, and we have just a few minutes left. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So, yeah, when you were outlining the history, you made a reference to you know, that at some point there may, in fact, be a sanctuary as part of the operation, but that's, you know, sort of cost prohibitive at the moment. But what sounds like you've, nonetheless, you guys have done some discussion, you've probably done some research. What is that, just sort of, hey, we might get to it at a certain point, or is it really part of a plan with you know, a timetable in place? Or
it is part of a long-term plan. We're probably looking at about 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. depending on how long it takes us to raise that sort of money, and we are talking about a tremendous amount of money.
Sure.
The purpose of the sanctuary, though, is not to house all birds permanently. We will always be focused on bringing birds in that we will then, for the most part, adopt out. There's always going to be 1 or 2% of birds, probably more like 1% at the most, that we do not feel comfortable adopting into a companion home for various reasons, or that does not show any kind of desire to be with humans, in which case that would be the type of bird that we would want to place in a sanctuary permanently. But for the most part, our focus always will be educating the public and finding forever homes for these birds with people in companion homes.
So at this point, when you hit that unfortunate 1% of birds that just can't or shouldn't be adopted out, where does that bird go now when you don't currently have access to at least your own sanctuary?
We have several permanent fosters in the rescue. And actually, in the last newsletter that we just put out on January 1st, we outlined some of the description of some of those permanent fosters and why they became permanent fosters. And that is listed, like I said, in that newsletter, which is available on the main page of our website. And our newsletter does come out quarterly, but again, it was released January 1st. A lot of it can be medical. If we have a bird that came in that had such severe medical conditions that we weren't comfortable adopting it into a companion home, then we might keep that bird. We do have other birds that have medical conditions that, of course, we are very upfront about that we still do attempt to adopt out, of mm-hmm. course, as long as the person is financially able to give that type of care long term.
Sure.
But we do have other sanctuaries that we have worked with that we have placed birds at in the past for permanent placement.
Cool. So just based on geography or just other kinds of aspects, that's, you know, those sanctuaries, are they relatively near here? I don't know of all of them.
There is one that's relatively near, located in Wesley Chapel, mm-hmm. that we have worked with in the past. And she has just as long of a waiting list as we do, if not longer, actually.
Sure.
So sometimes that can be a challenge as well.
Yeah.
Because what a lot of people don't realize is that we do have 145 birds in rescue, but we have a waiting list of birds that still need to come in that we don't have room for yet either.
Right.
And so the other purpose of us having a sanctuary in the long run is also a staging area. For example, the situation that we took Stevie out of, where we had to bring 35 birds in one day. That is a lot of birds for a rescue that only has 145 birds in rescue to accommodate at one time.
Yeah.
So having a staging area like that will make it easier on us to bring them in, have them vet checked, and then at that point evaluate them temperament wise and then push them out into foster homes.
Sounds like Stevie's getting a little more talkative again, which I enjoy hearing. It's like, hey, I think we should quiet down. People should just be able to hear Stevie. But maybe we'll get to that in another minute or two. But let's get at least one more caller involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Karen Atwood.
Hi, is this me?
It sure is. It's you.
Okay, I just had two questions, basically, and you've said a lot of stuff while I was on hold. So I was curious in regards to, A, volunteer efforts for, you know, the service, if what they would like or what the availability is for volunteer efforts, and B, as far as the adoption process, what would be very, like, strict requirements. I have cats in my home, so I don't – they're elder cats, so I don't know if that's a big deal or not, but it's just something that I was considering based on everything that she has said so far. It sounds like it could be a good situation, and my cats can't jump. They're 12 and 19, so, you know, they don't do much of anything except eat and sit around, but – I didn't know what all, how strict their requirements were when she was talking about having to go through the process.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's, thanks for your call. Thanks for your question. Karen, go ahead and you can address both things. Certainly, I guess both.
Okay. Well, we'll start with the requirements. Our first requirement is that you go onto our website and you fill out our application and you email it in. The first thing that we do is if you do own other animals like dogs and cats, which are fine with us. In fact, I own dogs and cats. It's not usually the bird that has the problem. It's the other animal that we have to teach to learn to live with the bird. And that takes a lot of common sense. But of course, we help educate you on that. But the first thing that we do is call your vet. We verify that any dogs and cats that you own are up to date on vaccinations and that dogs are on some type of heartworm preventative. Once that passes, we then move on to a home interview where we will send a volunteer out to your home where we will discuss not only diet and proper care of birds, but we will go over the setup of your home, where the best place is to set a cage. We'll talk about your other animals that are there, how to make sure that everything is safe for everyone. And then after that home interview is done and that has passed, we then have you go and meet some of the birds that you're interested in adopting. And we want to make sure that we get the right fit for you. So if you want to meet multiple birds, as long as you're willing to do that drive, then that is fine. Now, as far as dogs and cats are concerned, the setup of my home is that I do have a bird room with a gate up to the door, so my dogs cannot go in there. My cats have been taught not to go in there, and they do not. So my birds are safe and very comfortable in there. But, of course, they come out into other parts of the home, too. But I use common sense. I always supervise the bird. The bird is always within arm's reach of me. My eye is always on the bird. And so I make sure no one else gets hurt. But to be honest with you, if someone got hurt, it would probably be my dog, who likes to come up and sniff the birds, and he might sometimes
just
get bit on the nose.
Beak. Yeah,
right. He's comfortable with it because we've had him since he was a baby, and so he's always had birds in the home. He's always had other animals in the home, and to him, it's part of his pack.
Right.
And so he would protect it just like he would anyone else in the home. And, in fact, I've never had, in the 3 years that I've been doing this with the birds, I've never had any altercations in my home with my dogs or my cats and my birds.
That's great. And so, so it sounds like really that's there's the process for applying to foster or adopt. And how about if someone just was interested, as I may or may not have misunderstood the first part of a question, but if someone's just interested in sort of volunteering with the organization, may or may not want to necessarily get a bird at this point or adopt or foster, but just to help out the organization, how does that work?
We always need fosters and volunteers, fosters especially, of course, since we do have that waiting list going, but volunteers are always appreciated. We need people that are able to work the community events that we'll have tables at. Some we will have birds at, some we will not. Talking to the public, educating them about adopting, educating them about the birds that we may have with us. We also need people to transport birds into rescue. Sometimes we'll have a bird, like, say, all the way down in Miami that may need to come up to Tampa for fostering or to see our vet up here for a specific reason if there's something medically going on with that bird. Even though we have vets spread all out, we do have some very good specialists over here on this side.
Mm-hmm.
We also need people that are able to pick up donations and bring them to certain foster homes like cages and things like that.
Sure.
And we also have a very great need for people to help us with fundraising.
So, again, there's plenty to do depending on what your interests are or your time, schedule, et cetera. And, again, the website is floridaparrotrescue.com, and they're also on Facebook. And I just want, we have maybe just one or two more minutes here, but, you know, you hear, Karen, a lot about, puppy mills, whether, you know, Oprah or some other TV icon, film, documentary films, other media coverage. You don't hear so much about parent mills, but that's kind of a not unimportant factor in this conversation that we're having, isn't it?
Most definitely. Just like puppy mills, there are parrot mills out there where these birds are bred and bred and bred over and over again. And, in fact, we've had several birds come into rescue that the breeders are then done with and they don't want them anymore because they can't produce and they come to us. And those birds can be hard to place because they're not tame. They're not used to being in a companion home. They've been in a cage all of their life. They haven't been on a great diet. They'll have medical issues. But it is estimated, and it's hard to get some of these facts because there's not a lot of facts and statistics out there like there are for dogs and cats. But from what I have been able to ascertain in my research, there's anywhere between 1.4 and 1.6 million parrots in the United States, with about 20 to 30,000 of them being displaced every year from their homes. Mm. That is a lot of animals, especially for rescues and sanctuaries that a lot of people aren't even usually aware that they're there. That is one thing I get a lot, is that we didn't even know that there was a parrot rescue.
Mm-hmm.
We had no idea.
Right, right. Wow. All right. Well, those numbers are kind of staggering to sort of absorb. But again, Florida Parrot Rescue is certainly, you know, doing a lot to sort of help help those birds find find a home. And well, thank you so much. This has been, again, Karen Atwood from Florida Parrot Rescue. And the website, one more time, is floridaparrotrescue.com. They're also on Facebook. And the website is chock full of great, you know, information and just the range of birds and all the a lot of things we just didn't have a chance to cover today. But other stuff we did cover that will help kind of be supported by that great website. So thank you again, Karen. And thank you, Stevie. And really enjoyed having Stevie in here chatting away and stuff. So although it might be sad for you and your family, let's hope Stevie finds a home that works out soon. And thanks again, Karen.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Robert Cray at Janus Live on February 16th. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. And today's entry has a connection to WNF's Rockabilly Ruckus, February 18th at Skipper's, headlined by Lee Rocker. So it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Not surprisingly, lots of folks phoning in. Let's take them in the order they came. Hi, you're on WNF. Can you name that animal tune?
Yeah, but I don't think I'm eligible to win.
Oh, why? Are you Lee Rocker?
No, I'm not Lee Rocker, hardly, but it's been less than 90 days since I won something.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. You're a good man, Charlie Brown. So, okay, that's right. Let's go on to the next one. Thank you very much. That's pretty cool. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Hi, can I get a free ticket for the Rockabilly show?
If you can name that animal tune.
Stray Cat?
That's the band. We need the animal tune to actually win.
Meow.
Wow. Well, you are certainly trying hard. I think with that in mind, I'm gonna hand it off to you. So what is your first name, ma'am?
Oh, I'm Leslie. And when are they performing?
Well, it's the tickets are for Robert Cray at Janus Live on February 16th.
Oh, cool. I love Robert Cray.
Okay, so all right, so you were able to go? Great. So I'll just let you know, the song that you couldn't quite identify was Stray Cat Strut, so which ties into the fact that Rockabilly Ruckus on February 18th at Skipper's is headlined by Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats. So anyways, Leslie, I'm going to put you back on hold, and I'll get your information and get you all squared away.
Awesome. Thanks.
Okay, folks, we do have a winner. Leslie was the winner. If you're not Leslie, even if you think you won by being on hold, unless you're Leslie that I spoke to, next week will be your chance. All right. So, let's see. What else? What else now? I was going to... I already missed Stevie, but what are you going to do? He was cool. Okay, we have pretty much reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, February 15th, when our guest will be Omar Von Mueller, trainer of Uggie, the Jack Russell Terrier, who for many is the star of the Oscar-nominated film The Artist. We'll also have another talk with Libby Busalis, our friend and Talking Animals family member, who decided to go vegan at the first of the year. And sort of chronicling her her path that way, and we'll get an update next Wednesday. So I hope you'll join me for all that next Wednesday, February 15th, on Talking Animals. I also hope you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is the aforementioned Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next, noon to 3. He'll be joined today by Mike Doty. This will be fantastic. Not only is Doty's music great, 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 but he's wickedly smart. And a wonderful raconteur. He's due to join Scott, I think, around 2 p.m. So don't miss that or the rest of Scott's great show. We're closing out this show, as always, with an animal tune. This one, not coincidentally, is from Mike Doty. It's called Year of the Dog, taking us up to the NPR News on WNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks for listening.
Time tells butter fat lies, sweet lousy cupcakes of lies. I'll comply and I shall play along. I was born in the year of the dog. Bend the blue black tattoo and crawled on my arm, scribbled vines crawling my arm up. Then the rules arose up and it cried an alarm, sounded alarming alarms. And late on the lawn and the dawn till the morning got warm. Queer fear and severe clear, scrunch your fat face like a doll. I got made in the candy floss smog. I was born in the year of the dog. Benetrove and Mark Hor o'er the hills down the shore, over and down to the shore. Ben, I threw out my dreams, so I dream them no more. Drown them and dream them no more. Then I sat and I stared at the waves from my primer gray Ford. And I'm listless and lost and I cry all the time. Lost and I cry
from
all the time.
And Unlakshmi sang, still no sign of serious.